Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Welcome to the Media Project. You'll notice that I'm Rosemary Armeo, not Rex Smith, as Alan has been trying to tell us for years. Rex is all wet. Literally, his basement flooded in some bad weather we've been having. But the Media Project goes on anyway. This is your chance for some commentary, analysis, and as we always hope, a little bit of insight into the media issues of the week. Let me introduce the panel. You already know me. With me, Alan Chartok, who you also know very well.
Let me just say, Rosemary, that I love Rex Smith, and I don't think he's all wet. I have nothing but respect for him.
You're
just trying to make trouble.
Also with us is Mike Spain, who is the associate editor at the Times Union and knows a lot about this stuff. So we should be very learned today.
Oh, happy to be here.
So we all can breathe a sigh of relief. Donald Trump is back at Fox.
The boycott has ended?
Yes, he held a boycott for less than a week.
Less than a week. Six days, maybe?
6 days. He didn't like his treatment there, but he went back on O'Reilly. So what do we think? Are you surprised? Are you stunned by that?
No, I think, Rosemary, that this is all a game that keeps just getting played out again and again and again. Or as Yogi, the late Yogi, would have said, deja vu all over again. So, look, this is his game. Up to now, it's worked. There was a column in the Wall Street Journal which basically said Trump is done. He can't get above his 30%. This may be hopeful on the part of one writer, but the conservatives don't like Trump. Too much of a wild card. And that has been reflected in some of the press accounts. I think he may have peaked too early, but the press has certainly helped to paint Trump as a buffoon. And whether or not...
He does a pretty good job of that by himself. The press just has to get out of its way.
We're just pointing the camera at him, Alan.
Yeah.
No, I've always disagreed with all of you on this issue. I think the press, by playing straight out newspaper articles one way or another, often is able to editorialize in the guise of writing straight news stories, and that quite frequently they do that. I think they have certainly done that with Trump. And I have to say, I'm no Trump fan, as you all know, but I do think that this is too powerful for them. They don't want Trump.
Well, I was just going to say, Mike, and then I'll shut up. Even on his return, O'Reilly was not in his usual studio. He went to Trump Tower. That is the setting that Trump has chosen that makes him look like a king in the middle of his throne room.
Yeah. Can a Republican get the nomination without Fox News? Really?
That's interesting.
If someone boycotts Fox News and they're trying to appeal to the Republican base and the conservatives in the United States who watch cable TV, how can they possibly get their message out if they're boycotting Fox News? And also, we're talking about it on a media show. Well, and it's been reported all over. Trump broke his boycott 6 days into it. Most candidates haven't had a chance for an interview during that 6 days.
And this isn't the first time that he's done this.
Right.
So it's getting to be old.
Well, let's switch for a minute to the left, to the liberal side. CNN has changed its rules. It's holding a place in its debates in case Joe Biden should suddenly decide he's going to throw his hat in the ring.
I refer you
isn't
to...
Isn't that not the same thing?
As the British Prime Minister always says, I refer you to my answer in question 22. And that's exactly right. Now, don't tell me that doesn't reflect some prejudice, you know, on CNN's part in terms of what they might want to have happen here. I've always believed Biden is going to come in, and maybe that's why they're doing it. But on the other hand, as you said, Rosemary, so perceptively, they're changing the rules. And when you change a rule, that involves yourself in the authoritative allocation of scarce resources.
Well, they're just recognizing that Joe Biden, even though he has not announced that he's a candidate, is polling well. Often he's up to 20% or more, depending on who's conducting the poll and in which state. But
yeah, but she's still beating the stuffing out of him, right?
Well, on a national level, Hillary Clinton is still ahead. But Biden, who has not announced, is getting double digits. That does show that there's some groundswell of support for him, and CNN is building that into their...
I don't know. I think CNN just wants ratings, and Joe Biden in there would boost ratings. I think he may well not announce. The indications this morning are he does not want to make any kind of announcement until after the first debate. So if he were serious, why isn't he in it? Why isn't he announced already? And the longer he waits, the worse disadvantage he's at. Hillary is getting stronger. Even Bernie Sanders, his donations
fundraising
are huge.
Yeah, he's
$24 million
rivaling
right now.
Hillary. And most of those contributions are coming from the rank and file.
Little people, right.
They're not cocktail parties that you pay $2,700 to go to.
In fact, he's doing better than Barack Obama did at the same time when he was raising money.
The online part of it.
Yeah.
So you've got two very strong candidates. The longer he waits, how can that help him? And Biden has lots of his own problems. He's the representative of the Obama administration. So all the hatred of Obama's policies will fall down on him. And number two, he's got a big mouth. He gets in trouble all the time for saying stuff.
On the first item, I think he has a lot of Teflon. He seems to be able to deflect a lot of the hostility and animosity that people have towards Obama and Obamacare or whatever policy you don't like about Obama. But this could be, CNN could actually be cooking the whole election here or the primary process here and kind of forcing him to go in. It gives him an opportunity to say, well, I was still thinking about it, but now that CNN has offered me that, I owe it to the American public to, you know, it could be the excuse that he needs to jump in. What do you think?
Well, I think the press is pretty powerful, as I said before, and I think that CNN is pretty powerful. You say that Fox is powerful. How can anybody win without Fox? I think the news is, Mike, that how can anybody win with Fox these days? How can any Republican win with Fox? I mean, I think that, you know, they do control a lot of conservative viewers. There's no question. But I don't see them as being representative of the American people. Right now, I don't think any of them have any traction that shows me that they can be a danger to the Democratic candidate, whoever that is. When you lose Hispanics, when you lose women, I don't see the numbers
are not with the Republicans unless there's a very bad low turnout and people are just discouraged and don't go to the polls. And that could be part of it. You know, that could be part of the strategy.
No question. And of course,
how do you play that if you're at CNN or at Fox?
What do you mean, how do you play?
What's the role of the media in projecting the image of the Republican Party or the problems of the Democrats?
These networks don't do what we do here on the Media Project. They don't step back and say, let's examine the implications of what we're doing here. They just do it.
Well, clearly, I think they're doing it for ratings. I agree with you, yeah. Rosemary. By inviting Joe Biden, they're getting people to talk about it. They're adding to the buzz.
They're not the media
covering an event. They're actually participating in the process. And arguably that could be overstepping their bounds.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to figure out. It also, they'll make the argument that it's all above board. They just want to be inclusive. So they have it both ways. Well, one medium that is not powerful at all. In fact, it looks pretty weak, in my view, is the Daily News. We're hearing that we may be ending the era of the tabloid in New York City.
Is that ERA or ERROR?
Does it matter?
Well, you know, look, from the very first, Rex, in all his perspicacity, and all of us have known that this is not good. What's happening to the print media is terrible. The New York Times ran a very interesting article in which they laid it all out for us and showed that while there were, I think, over 2 million copies, something like that, sold by the Daily News, they're down to in the 300,000s.
It's gone from 1 million copies a day at a height to now a daily circulation of just over 300,000.
And you can see what the New York POST is doing. It's fascinating. They have one sexy-looking woman after another, and then they're talking about what the various shows are doing. I'm going through the paper as we sit right here, but they have two full nude pictures in the paper today.
They're following the British tabloid model.
Yeah.
The demise of the Daily News is just a tragedy.
Terrible.
And even though they're only selling 300,000 copies, they're being viewed by probably as large an audience or close to that because of the internet. The problem is they're not getting any real revenue from the 700,000 or whoever are viewing it only online. It just, they're getting very little revenue. The model to support newspapers, print newspapers, and the operations that produce print newspapers is broken, and it needs to find itself.
And, you know, I think there's all kinds of indications that young people do not read newspapers for news.
Well, in fact, there's a study we might talk about which shows that, indeed, young people are willing to pay for online content. They pay a lot.
Online content.
Right. What they're buying are movies, sports, entertainment. Too few of these millennials are going to say, okay, I'll pay money to read the New York Daily News or the New York Times. They're not going for news. It's news that is the commodity, not selling.
Now, think about the implications of that. How can we have any kind of a democratic government in which people put, you know, their views up and then say, I'll vote for this person, but I don't know anything. I'm stupid. I don't follow the news. I don't know where the Pacific Ocean is. You mentioned Putin or Carly Fiorina. What do they know about that? They don't know a thing. And therefore, they're going to walk in, if we're lucky, a third of them are going to walk into the voting booth and vote on something. And it's because they don't have an appetite for news. What do we do about that?
Well, I give them a little more credit. I think the younger audience is not going out and seeking news. What they're doing is when they're interested in something or when they want to know something, they know how they can get the answer. They don't approach it as an academic discipline. They don't study politics. I mean, a small percentage do because they're interested, but they know that when they need to know something, they can just pull out their phone and they can get lots of information from it. The problem is, do they know where to get the information, and do they know where to find unbiased information and get objective information?
I don't know. I think the problem is more serious than that, Mike. This study that I referenced comes from Media Insight Project. It's an initiative of the American Press Institute and Associated Press. So organizations deeply rooted in real news. And what they found was that even among that small percentage of millennials who are paying for news, what they want is real practical stuff. They want to know the weather, they want to know traffic, and they want to know stuff that's going to get them ahead in their jobs. That's not the sort of investigative, entrepreneurial, storytelling stuff that we grew up loving and expecting from print.
And from the Daily News. Think about it. The Daily News was the place that most people, or many people in New York City, got the news about the city. The Times didn't do it as well as the Daily News.
That's right.
Did.
The Times never covered the city.
Yeah.
Well, and in fact, that is something that has happened with the growth of news over the internet. We have lost local coverage. That's true for the Times Union in Albany. You know that, Mike. And it's true now in New York City. The New York Daily News, founded in 1919, had a schizophrenic mix, if I can quote from the article we all read, a titillating crime reportage, hard-hitting coverage of public issues. It veered away from politics. It was right down the center, actually, at that. And New York was portrayed as this great place that had enemies and friends. That's the whole kind of theme of the Daily News. And
that sounds like you're reading an obituary.
Well, that's exactly what
it is.
Well,
it is.
Sadly,
yeah.
That's true.
I mean, you know, we all know that the owner has put it up for sale, and they talk about a dollar, but you have to assume all of the debt,
liabilities,
and all the rest of it. So it sounds to me like they're going out of business. Now,
they're looking for another billionaire to come in who wants to own a tabloid in New York City.
But isn't that so dangerous?
That's the only salvation. Yeah.
But isn't that so dangerous that at this stage of the game, the people who are going to own papers are people who can afford to lose a lot of money. And we see it all the time. The Washington Post gets bought that way. We saw that when the New York Times was in so much trouble, who bailed them out? A billionaire named
from Mexico.
Carlos Slim, right? Is that his name?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So Zuckerman is willing to sell the paper, but look.
Hand over the paper, essentially.
Well, there are a lot of people in New York City, where I grew up, papers that we all got. We got it, the Herald Tribune and the Times, every morning, first thing. Then the Journal American was there. The New York Telegram was there.
The Mirror was there.
They're all gone.
Yeah. So if you've got $20 to $30 million a year to lose and take off on your income tax, call up Mort.
Well, how about $100 million a year to lose?
That's the Post. The Post is losing that, but not the Daily News.
Not yet.
The losses aren't as great.
And what they're doing, of course, is firing people. And some of their stars are being packed up and sent on their way. This is a downward death spiral. That's what it is.
They just got rid of some wonderful columnists and sports writers, which is their bread and butter, and they've announced that they're going to go for a digital worldwide impact. I don't know.
And then what do you get? If the only way, as Mike and you have said, Rosemary, to catch young people is to do what I'm looking at right here, it's just terrible. It's almost a full-page spread in the New York Post, POST, which says, Breastworld, it's Wild West's HBO extra signed sex waivers, and they show a man and a woman undressed, holding on to each other. Well, if that's
I'm not so sad about losing that.
Well, you're not going to lose it in the Post.
After being very poetic, you know, about the Daily News.
If Zuckerman is unable to find a buyer for the Daily News or someone to take it over and take on its debt of operations, and it does end up folding, what will that do to the profitability of the New York Post? It really won't change the dynamic that much for you.
No, I'm not sure you're right. Because if the news goes out of business, there is a tabloid group of people who will want a tabloid. And this will be the tabloid, even though it's far more to the right than the Daily News has ever been.
Well, Newsday will probably make another stab at Manhattan at that point. You know,
it might be an opening.
Yeah.
Well, you are listening, and we thank you for that very much to the Media Project. And I want to ask my co-panelists here another question about the power of the press. In Philadelphia, the mayor had kind of a temper tantrum against the press. You may recall there was a little bit of coverage on this. Pope Francis went to Philadelphia this past week.
He did.
Yes. And the mayor, Michael Nutter, was upset that
an unfortunate name.
The crowds that he had predicted did not materialize. They had estimated that 1 to 1.5 million people would show up, and
for the
it was
Pope.
Much lower than that, right, to see the Pope. So he, in a fit of anger, said, "I think that in some instances, talking to the press, you all scared the out of people. They just didn't want to come
down." He actually used that word.
He did use the word. Yes.
It was the S. We call it the S word.
Yeah, he used the S word.
So the city wanted to have 1 million to 1.5 million people come, and probably if you get that many people together, there would have been a lot of disappointed people who were stranded under the hot sun or perhaps unable to get to restrooms. Probably there would have been dehydration and there would have been a lot of problems. Who knows what else might have happened? And the press warned about that. That was a big Every article I read was something saying, if you're going to get there, you may not get a good view. You should realize that you're going to be far back, and you'll be lucky if you get a glimpse at the Pope when he goes by. And that, I think, discouraged people. And they decided to do what so many people did. They just left their TV on all day and got the experience.
But the fight that Rosemary is alluding to here was between the mayor, who said to the media, "You lied. We had more people than," isn't that right?
No. He the crowds were definitely down, and he blamed the media for that. They rained on his parade.
I see.
And kept the crowds down.
But he bawled out the press. And there is always a question as to whether if you're a politician and you bawl out the press, it's a good thing. Now, people don't like the press. We know that. The polls show that and all the rest. But what about the fact that when a politician yells at the press, people tend to think that the politician is a crybaby?
Yes. And Mr. Nutter did indeed back down, and at a press conference, his regular press conference after he had cooled down,
he apologized for
an intemperate remark and made a funny reference to his mother sending him a terse email about his being polite and his language.
Well, it was the right thing to do. Apologizing is always a good thing to do.
Yeah, he probably got
I find it very hard myself.
Well, the Pope certainly got plenty of coverage, that's for sure.
He certainly did.
But one of the things that is interesting that I hope you're going to raise on this week's show as moderator, Rosemary, is the Pope's secret meeting with a certain clerk.
Davis.
Yes.
Perfect segue. You read my mind. What do we think about this? The Pope, it turns out, met with the Kentucky law clerk, public court clerk, who has gained quite a bit of notoriety with her stand against gay marriage. And even though the Supreme Court has
not issuing licenses.
Right. Even though the court has ruled this is the law of the land, she has refused to sign licenses.
She spent 5 days in jail for contempt of court by refusing to issue marriage licenses. And this meeting, which happened the last few hours while the Pope was in Washington, D.C., was arranged by the Vatican. It was not done with
the assistance
of the U.S. Catholic Conference of Bishops. They had no role in it. And the Vatican officials contacted Kim Davis. She and her husband were in Washington for some award. and the Pope spent 10 minutes with her and her husband in a private
hugged her, called her brave.
Yes, and called her brave. And then on the plane, on the way back to Rome, after the Philadelphia visit by the Pope, he spoke to reporters, and somebody brought that up and said, if somebody is in a public position and decides that conflicts with their religious beliefs, shouldn't they fulfill their public position? And he said, no, you should have the right of conscientious objector. And he said, that's a right we all should have. And I agree with him. And we heard about that during the Vietnam War when someone didn't want to go off to war and they wanted to resist the draft, and they would choose their own personal right to conscientiously object. But Kim Davis is different. She was elected to a public office to uphold the Constitution of the land. And the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that there could not be a prohibition on same-sex marriages, and she refused to honor that. She had another option.
Yeah, she could just quit. She could conscientiously object by getting out of that office.
Okay, but so, what I'm interested in about this, this is the idea that the Pope, I think, in a way, did something that was not representative of how he had conducted himself the rest of the time. Look, I'm a big fan. I loved what he conducted himself. I loved the things he did and said. But this was done in secret. And the agreement was, we're not going to allow you to take pictures of this. Nothing comes out until after the fact. And I think in some ways this deprecates the Pope's performance while he was here.
I think it subtracts. Take some of the glow off it. I agree with you.
Well, I hate the collusion against the press.
Right.
You know, we're going to keep this secret and not talk about it until we want to.
Because the rest of it was pretty transparent.
Well, that happens all the time. I mean,
I don't like it. But,
you know, he met with a lot worse people. If you don't like Kim Davis and you disagree with her politics, he met with a lot worse people.
But he
met with Raul Castro. He met with Fidel Castro.
And they allowed the press to see that.
Right.
And when he went into prisons, they allowed the press to see that. But this one was kept secret. And I think that is not representative.
I'd like to know more about it. And I think more will come out about it. But he definitely has very conservative handlers who are arguing that the Pope isn't that liberal. The New York Times had a big piece on Sunday about how the Vatican is trying to play down all the openness that the Pope seems to be projecting to points of view that conflict with church teaching, and that he really isn't agreeing with these people on the outside.
Well, the word from the Vatican is a more political explanation than you're giving, Mike. They're saying that if they had publicized that, that would have dominated everything. That would have been the whole overarching press attention to his visit.
Fewer people would have come to Philadelphia if that might have gotten out. Who knows?
That's true. There are many people who would rather have not been in Philadelphia.
Couldn't resist.
As we're running out of time, I want to ask if you've read about Reporta. It's a new app that's come out from the Committee for the Protection of Journalists.
Well, we know you have a tremendous interest in this.
I do. That's why I had to bring it up.
Right. And I read it very carefully to say, what does this mean to me, other than that my cherished reporters who are giving me dangerous news will be protected from it? But it really is an insider's game, isn't it? I mean, it's for people who are reporters. It protects them. And tell us what it does.
It's an app you put on your phone, and every reporter working these days probably is likely to have a phone. And it just connects you to, well, whoever you want to be connected to, your boss, your radio station, your family. And if you get into trouble, it sends out a warning and it shuts off the phone so that if you were kidnapped, for example, they could not get your phone and use it against you.
Yeah.
It's an example of technology helping reporters who are under great duress do their job today. And I think it's an important app, and there's unfortunately a very good place
big need for it. That's what makes me so scared about it. We actually need it. Well, we are just about out of time.
Oh,
I want to thank Alan Chartok and Mike Spain for joining me, Rosemary Armeo, on this week's Media Project.
Thank you, Rosemary, for stepping in Rex's place.
Extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. Like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ting-a-ling, ting-a-ling, ling-a-ling-a-ling. Now, newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. when they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild, got a free new world to build. Meet the people.